The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Every day we live, yeah. Every day we live, yeah. Every day we live, yeah. Every day we live.
Welcome, Rochester, to Let's Get Lit. We are so excited today. We have a special guest in the studio with us. And when you all get ready to hear about the exciting contributions that he has done and what you can do to tap into the many resources he has, I am going to begin by letting us know today's topic, which is Let's Get Lit, the power of liberating collaboration. So we're going to have our special guest first introduce himself.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. My name is Matt Present. I'm the founder of the Rochester, New York chapter of Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. It's a bit of a mouthful, but we'll explain what that means as the episode goes on.
Nice to have you here. And I'm Naima Nateri, New York State certified and Hood certified educator, mother, activist, dancer, lactation, all around good sister to know.
Yes, and you already know you have me, Cleonda Florence, in the building. Educator, entrepreneur, innovator, and serious about literacy being our greatest social justice issue of our time. So we're going to throw it to Naima, that's going to hit us off with some hip hop history.
So as you all know, we're celebrating the 50th year of hip hop. And today in hip hop history, the GZA of the Wu-Tang Clan was born August 22nd, 1966. Shout out to the Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang is for the children. Amen.
And
also,
amen.
Also,
Chappelle shout out. I like that.
Also, J Dilla released his third album, The Shining, today, August 22nd, 2006. Rest in peace to J Dilla, one of the best to do it, ill producer. Tap in. And also yesterday, August 21st, 2007, Talib Kweli released his third studio album, Eardrum. All lit projects, all lit people in this lit terrary culture we call hip hop. So salute to all of those gentlemen.
Yes. So for those who are listening to our podcast for the first time, LIT stands for Liberating Individuals Through Literary Texts. And we believe hip hop was very liberating and it was emancipating because it gave a platform to introduce something that Naima talks about all the time, which is vocabulary, touching on some of the human rights issues that people would not closely pay attention to, but when they hear it in a rap song, they became what they call conscious. So conscious then versus conscious now is a whole nother, in my opinion, conversation, because people are just throwing that word around without really understanding what consciousness meant. And I believe hip hop, the way they were able to write it and pull people in, it was just phenomenal.
Right. And conscious then is woke now. And you know that woke now is being weaponized. You know?
Right.
So
everybody
was that.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to start really quickly with just some literary facts. The literacy volunteers created a fact sheet. And I want us to just think on these things. And these are facts that are impacting Rochester, New York. 57% of Rochester residents over the age of 16 are only reading at what they call a basic level of literacy, which is equivalent to sixth grade. And this was the National Institute of Literacy back in 2003. 60% of online job applications are not completed due to the complexity or length, according to recent workforce study. And lastly, 32% of Rochester residents have no internet access and 19% have no computer at home. Rochester is the fifth poorest city in the country. And in the city, 46% of our children are poor. So, Matt, tell us about what you're doing and how you help to make a dent in literacy.
Well, thank you so much for those statistics and for the introduction. It's really a privilege to be here, and you know, your introduction speaks to so many of the things that were on my mind when I decided to found this literacy nonprofit here in Rochester. So what we do at the Imagination Library is incredibly easy. We mail one brand new, free, high quality, age appropriate, culturally relevant book to children across the city of Rochester from when they are born until they turn five. And so that could very well mean you. If you have a child who's under five and live within the city limits of Rochester, we serve anybody who's within the city school district. I would love for you to go to rochesterimaginationlibrary.org and sign up right now. There are no strings attached. It takes about 30 seconds to sign up, and then magically, in about the next 6 weeks until your child turns five, you're going to have a brand new book arriving in your mailbox.
That is awesome. You know, building the home library is very, very key to having young people see reading as a fun activity.
You know,
and they get excited about it. I mean, I like getting gifts.
Free gifts.
And new ones out there. Brand new, not gently used.
Right.
And do you remember once upon a time when you would get a piece of mail and you'd be excited about it?
With your name on it?
Yeah, right. Now when mail has got my name on it, I'm like, oh God, what bill did I not pay? But yeah, right. You know, back in the day when you were young, getting a piece of mail is exciting. Getting a gift is exciting. And, you know, that's one of the, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's really one of the pieces that drew the program to me, was the sense that, you know, let's make sure that everybody feels that a book is something that belongs in their hands, right? And not just, you know, a used book, not just something that somebody else had beforehand. I want every child in the city of Rochester and all of their caretakers to feel empowered to love literature, to love books. And to feel that they deserve the highest quality resources possible.
Right on, right on. I want to provide our listeners with some background information about the program, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
So it says in 1995, Dolly Parton launched an exciting new effort, Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, to benefit the children of her home county in East Tennessee, USA. Dolly's vision was to foster a love of reading among her county's preschool children and their families. The new program gave each child a specially selected book each month. By mailing high-quality, age-appropriate books directly to their homes, Dolly Parton, she wanted children to be excited about books and to feel the magic that books can create. Moreover, she could ensure that every child would have books, regardless of the family's income. Since its launch, Dolly Parton's Imagination Library has set and surpassed many goals and milestones. National replication, which started in 2000, allowed more and more communities to adopt the program, which is what we have here in Rochester, thanks to you. Statewide coverage was established in Tennessee in 2004. Furthermore, international growth provided expansion in Canada in 2006, the UK in 2007, and Australia in 2014. So this is a global effort.
Right. That's right.
Micro,
mezzo, big ups to Miss Parton, rest in power.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when I was thinking about starting it, I was just a little shocked that kids in Australia are getting these books.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And kids right here in Rochester weren't getting these books.
Period.
And you know, in my day job, you know, because this is a volunteer gig, I'm a pediatrician over at the Children's Hospital. And so, you know, I like looking at numbers and looking at evidence and making sure that things work. And this thing is rocket fuel. I mean, it's crazy. Kids who are signed up for this are 30% more likely to show up to kindergarten on the first day, knowing their letters and their numbers. You know, and one of the things that tells me is we have all of these members of our community, all these families out here who are just ready to hit the ground running. All we have to do is connect them with resources. You know, and this is, you know, it's a wonderful program. I'm glad it exists, but you know, this is not brain surgery here, right?
Right.
You know, this is just a matter of getting children what should be a fundamental human right, which is access to literature. You know, you mentioned notions of consciousness, and then you mentioned, you know, difficulty with, you know, being able to read beyond a sixth grade level. Like, you know, it is, we're setting folks up, children and young adults, to struggle with difficult concepts if we do not provide them and their families with the resources that they deserve.
Right.
Well, we forgot to do something that we do in every one of our interviews.
Let's back it up.
And that's to ask you, when did you fall in love with literacy, Matt?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You know, I was so lucky to have a mother who there was no negotiating. We were going to have a bedtime story every night, and she took profound joy in reading us, you know, this broad swath of books. And, you know, so I think it's really, as long as I can remember, I've always loved reading myself. But when I became a pediatrician, you know, I understood a couple of things. The first is that families are just so dedicated to their success, right? And in spite of the institutional levels of racism and enforced economic violence that has defined so much of the history of Rochester, people hustle for their kids. I mean, they really, really do.
No, I do for mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you do for yours.
I've yet to meet a parent who doesn't, right? And I remember giving a book to a patient, and it was about 6 months old. And I said, hey, you know, here's a book. You know, let's, whenever you're ready, kind of get into that routine, you know, mm-hmm. bed, bath, book, right? And they said, you know, thank you so much. I saw them a couple months later and I said, you know, how's that going? And they said, we love that book, right? Mm-hmm. That is a book that we love. And, you know, it sort of came to light in the conversation that that was the book in the house, right? That was the one book. And so what that showed me was an extraordinary level of dedication on this family's part, as well as a resource gap, right? And it's so satisfying to fill these resource gaps because, you know, people are going to take advantage of what you put in front of them, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, so we have this tremendous resource in our community, which is our parents and our grandparents and our caretakers, and we need to enable them to flourish, and that's really what providing these books is about.
Right, and I think that's key because Goldie Muhammad wrote a book about unearthing joy, and when you think about so many resources, I've been told that Rochester is resource rich.
Mm. Outcomes
but
poor.
Outcome, you know, very poor.
Yeah. Yep.
Or resource rich and only a handful uh-huh. know.
Yep.
And if you're not in that inner circle, you know, she was talking about the importance of information being something that is tangible, something that you can ascertain and obtain. The problem sometimes is in Rochester is if you're not in those circles that interlock, mm-hmm. then you'll just be on the outside gazing at what I know I would like or not even knowing what you like and wondering what it's like.
Yeah.
Hoping that I could just not even touch the table, but be able to be in the presence of the table. And when you think about reading is not only a human right, but it being our greatest social justice issue of our time. And right now people are ignorant talking about some reading war.
Yeah.
And it pains me because instead of using this time to get resources in the hands of educators, in the hands of community members, in the hands of parents, we'd rather have Fontes and Pinnell and any of the other McGraw and other the high hitters have this reading war to get us off task.
Yeah.
And how that's impacting the classroom, for example.
Right.
How it's impacting parents. So what are your thoughts about this reading war?
I mean, I think, you know,
let's put war in air quotes.
Because I'm, you know, big ones at that.
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. And, you know, the same can be said for the distractions related to, you know, the book bans, right?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
yeah.
The irony of people discussing, you know, these wars, the bans, as children are straight up just not learning how to read.
Period.
You know, it's like, where is our focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more that it's the greatest civil rights issue of our time. And it is also, and social justice issue of our time. And it's also, you know, frankly, one of the more addressable ones, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, there are some things that are a heavy lift, right? Climate
right.
change
this is
a big old heavy
that's
lift.
Let's
right?
get up under here.
You know, right? You know, you're talking about, you know, trillions of dollars that you're going to need, right? As you know, the Imagination Library shows, I mean, it costs $2 a month to get a book to a kid at their house. And what does that do? That gets them ready for kindergarten. What does getting ready for kindergarten do?
Mm.
It increases high school graduation rates.
It
increases core health outcomes, right? I mean, there is low-hanging fruit that we can pick here, right?
Right.
And that's why it's such a joy for me, and I assume for you too as well, to be able to participate in the march towards higher rates of literacy, right? I mean, this can be done. Every child is capable of learning how to read. It's just, you know, our responsibility as a society to make sure that they're in a position to do so.
And I wanted to ask Naima, because it's funny you said that, because we know as being in the classrooms and being on the front line, the race to the top and the no child left behind and all the different jingles of names that is basically perpetuated based on failure.
Yeah.
And Naeem and I will often talk about, like, you know, what we would be able to do if we just get a third of what they throw around. And you have to fail in order to be in the qualifying lap.
Yeah. Yep.
And as soon as you start seeing an inch of success, they snatching
cords. They pull their cords up.
They rolling them up. So it's like, what are we saying to teachers and parents and schools? It's like this race, remember, it's only ran for failure.
Yep.
And as soon as you get in this area of success, you're on your own. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Naima, how do you, from the landscape of a teacher, listening to what Matt says about the foundation, why is that important for the classroom?
Well, the culture of failure, I believe, is rooted in capitalism. You have to have an underclass in order for this system to work and to perpetuate itself. And so I believe that, you know, we all are, in some cases, if we fall victim to it, we're fodder, you know, cannon fodder. You know, we're made to be consumed, whether it's by the school, the prison system, or pipeline, you know, and there's a certain number of people that have to fall into that trap in order for this system to, again, perpetuate itself. But speaking about those numbers, this program sends out 2 million books a month. Globally.
Globally. Yeah.
For free 99.
There you go. Yeah.
And so
free 99. Say that again.
Free 99.
Thank you.
So
brand new.
For me, my, as an educator, when I am crossing paths with people like you, I'm like, okay, I'm going to tap in. I'm going to have every teacher in my building just like spreading the word, the old-fashioned way, word of mouth.
There you go.
Because we don't know what we don't know, and there's so much being thrown at us as a distraction that we skip over these programs or we just miss them. They're throwing sponsored programs in our faces that are, you know, that, that are connected to people in politics somehow. You know, and Dolly Parton was a real writer.
Period.
And I say that because of her actions, how she dedicated and donated her royalties from I Will Always Love You back to the Tennessee, you know, to Nashville. Like, just her work in and of itself, like, so what she was really about, you know. So I'm like, you know, Dolly Parton, salute to you, my beloved sister, you know.
But it's, I mean, speaking to sort of the entrenched nature, you know, as you mentioned, the economic system, capitalism, right? The system of government right now in which inaction is rewarded. The idea that it falls to Dolly Parton, you know, to start this program, right? And then not only that, but, you know, it gets studied like crazy, you know, like people like, you know, Cleand and you know, her mentor, Carol St. George, right? Folks who are, you know, really taking it upon themselves to understand the nature of education, and we know it works, and we know it's cheap, and we know it's scalable, and it's still on private individuals. You know, it just
in our entertainer class.
You know,
it's like, what's up with that?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, we could get right now a brand new book to every child in the city of Rochester under the age of five for, you know, roughly the same cost as you know, one police car per year, you know, which isn't to say anything about the police, except to say, you know, like, there's,
we saying, but we not saying, but we
yeah,
saying.
You know, I don't want to get in too much hot water here, but all that I mean to say is, and again, and we know that the, one of the great ways to, you know, interrupt the school to prison pipeline is to actually educate people. Right.
Love that.
And actually, by the way, this, I got a couple of registrations a few days ago that just delighted me. They were a couple of incarcerated individuals who had signed their children up from the Monroe County Jail.
Wow.
And I just, that to me was just, you know,
you're disrupting, I'm thrilled. The flow of traffic in that way.
You know, I hope so a little bit. I hope so a little bit. You know, because as we know, the carceral state, right. The, you know, I recently read the Michelle Alexander book, The New Jim Crow, which is a very, very, very upsetting and convincing argument. And, you know, it meant a lot to be able to do, you know, some small degree of trying to interrupt this process that's been going on in this country for, you know, 500 years.
Right.
And that's, that in itself right there is serious, because when you think about liberating collaborations, everybody talks about, we need to free your mind. You need to free education, because education is supposed to be this freeing experience. But yet it is one of the most captivating, and I don't mean it in a way where it's like, ah, like, I can't wait to get here. It is imprisoning the mind. Because my question is, how do we get children from pre-K till about second grade that are so excited about learning, and something happens second, going into third grade, where it's a disdain, like, I cannot stand not only reading, but learning.
Yeah.
It has become such a daunting task where you're only, what age, what is the average age of a third grader? You're looking at like what?
Seven, eight years old.
Yeah. And you're already, based on research, it says at the fourth grade is when children begin to mentally drop out.
That's right.
So you're talking about less than 12 years old. They're already being on this track of mental dropout. Then it starts to be actuated in middle school with truancy and attendance. Then when you tack on those caveats of credits, and I can't read at level, I can't comprehend math at level.
And social promotion.
There you go. So we're fighting. Now, those are the real wars that no one wants to talk about.
Right. Right.
But we rather war on, you know what? Should it be fluency or whole word? Should it be write, read, and draw? Or should it be draw, read, and write? You tell me. And you got people spending millions of dollars sending people to conferences.
I know,
to
I got
come
the bag
back.
And the pen in the
and I'm walking around like I was at the right read, no
the
conference.
Conference.
And this right here, and like you said, what does it cost if the Board of Regents would have said, okay, I see what you're doing, Matt, and I see what Dolly Parton doing. Let's take, y'all doing the beginners pre-K,
let's
early
take middle school,
childhood. We're going to take on elementary, middle, and high.
Right.
And if you all are doing this one book a month, a brand new book, and we know what home libraries can do, then why aren't we trying to like latch on? And that's what I'm talking about with liberating collaborations. But that latch on won't be easy.
Yeah.
Because the state will make some sort of knocks to make it where you're like, you know what, forget it. I'm gonna go back into my early childhood corner. Y'all stay in a corner of failure in that collaboration.
Everyone gets
siloed. Exactly.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's like, I wanna know, what are you all's thoughts about how we're just not looking at collaboration? It's more of like this individualistic identity.
Well, I know for educators, we talk about modeling an expectation. And I think that us on this podcast right now with you, Matt, is us modeling an expectation of us meeting you, shaking hands, making eye contact, and discussing, you know, and actually doing the work. Because people can't be what they can't see, right?
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up. And that, you know, that was really one of the reasons why I wanted to bring the program here. I mean, I will tell you, you know, the first thing I did when I thought, well, why don't we have this here? Rochester's kids deserve this. Is I went through the curriculum and made sure that there was adequate representation. You know, I did not want to participate in the erasure of children of color. You know, that's the substantial majority of children in the city that we'd be sending books to. And what I discovered was the opposite, right? I mean, it was this incredibly vibrant collection that featured diversity in all of its beautiful forms, right? We send out a book that deals with the experience of a child with autism at the beach who's become overwhelmed, and, you know, how his father comforts him, or the experience of a young Native woman who becomes the first pilot, you know, and, you know, to say nothing of, you know, classics like Corduroy or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, you can't be what you can't see is so crucial, right? And what is the first escape mechanism for anybody ever? It's books, right? It's using your imagination.
Right. Yep.
You know, I mean, that is your blast off point. And particularly in a city that's hobbled by a lack of transportation, that's hobbled by poverty.
Talk about it.
You know, we have kids here in our community who've never seen Lake Ontario, right? And, you know,
or been a strong museum.
Or been a strong museum.
I mean, or the science museum.
Or the Eastman House.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
All of these, you know,
Durand Beach.
Exactly. You know, quote unquote amazing, quote unquote community resources, right? That people may not, you know, have access to.
And this is the first boom town.
Right. Oh my God. I mean, yeah, Rochester. A lot of money still in Rochester.
Yeah, 10th richest city.
Yeah, yeah.
10th richest city.
Yeah.
And it's funny because as you all were talking, I stumbled across this quote from Goldie Muhammad from Cultivating Genius. And she said, literacy was not just for self-enjoyment or fulfillment. It was tied to action and efforts to shape the socio-political landscape of a country that was founded on oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, until we go back to the bare sheath and deal with the oppressive, not only ideologies and worldviews and biases, but also what are the policies that are oppressive?
Yep.
how has education in its origin been oppressive? How are the lack of affordable housing, how that beelines into what you're saying as a pediatrician and literacy? If you don't get adequate sleep, how are you going to be ready to learn?
Such a crucial thing to mention. You know, this is all tied together. You know, Rochester, the city of Rochester, RCSD, and the Penfield School District has the greatest disparity in rates of child poverty of any place in the United States of America, right? I mean, that is a black eye on this community, right?
That no one talks about.
Could you just say that again?
Because I just want people to know how close.
Totally. I teach medical students and residents now, and I make sure that everybody knows about this, right? Mm-hmm. In the United States, the entire United States, the border between the city of Rochester School District and the Penfield School District is the greatest disparity in two bordering school districts in child poverty rates anywhere.
Right? In the United States.
That's right? Not the number one place. Like, you don't want to be first for the wrong reason.
Right.
Yeah, wow, but here we are.
And it's the worst place for African Americans to live. So you couch that into what you just said.
Yep.
Plus with rent being too darn high, couch with food disparity, couch with the education system. Right. It's like, what do you expect?
That's right.
But then I question, is the system broken or is it designed to be functioning as it is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have ample historical documentation that, you know, as recently as one generation ago, this was fully by design, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this, and it's almost in some ways, once you know the information, and you really sort of have to try not to know the information.
You can't unsee it.
You can't unsee it, and you become responsible for its remediation, right?
If you're about that life.
Or its perpetuation, right?
Or you become a victim to it, it affects you in some traumatic way,
right?
You know, where
right.
you can't
Absolutely.
Help but to become an
Which is why I'm
activated.
Continually astonished and inspired by the, we've now got about 2,500 children enrolled in the program across the city of Rochester. And I'm continually inspired by, in spite of all of the obstacles that you've both so eloquently described, you know, obstacles that were, to a large extent, intentionally set up, and the lion's share of which affect communities of color, people still make incredible use of these resources that we send them, right? I mean, they still are reading them every night. They're still encouraging their kids to read them every night, you know? I love hearing about the 7 or 8 year olds who start to read to their younger siblings when they get the books, right? You know, people, the resilience is astonishing, right? And that's not the narrative, right? That's not what often gets shared about the city of Rochester. Right. You know, it's a lot of negativity, but I see it every day with my patients in my clinic and in my work with the Rochester Imagination Library. People refuse to stay down. I mean, they continue to hope and they continue to dream and they continue to, you know, whatever small bridge you offer them, you know, they continue to try to cross it.
I know that speaks to the elasticity of the brain, and how
you guys are touching on all my favorite topics.
Bam. Well, we do neuroscience too in middle school. Talk about brain elasticity and how synaptic pruning, and if you don't use it, you lose it. So,
exactly.
But we can change.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you were to design an education system that really focused on the moments of greatest sort of neuroplasticity and neurodevelopment in children, I can tell you, it wouldn't start at 5. Right?
Thank you.
And it wouldn't start at 3. It would start
in utero.
It would start in utero.
There That's you
right.
go.
And it would continue onwards from there. I mean, you know, you have a million, right, conception. Maybe a little bit before that, right?
Conception. Manifestation.
But, you know, like, you're talking about, you know, in the first year, so far as they know, and they continue to discover as they get more sensitive instruments, it's about a million new neural connections every second that are being formed by children under the age of 1. You know, and so you talk about sort of the light that gets extinguished in kids. You know, they arrive at school and they're ready to learn and they're ready to do things. You know, by the time they're 7 or 8 or 9 years old, that's gone. A lot of that is because, you know, families have not been given the support and the resources to enable them to prepare their child for the first day of school. And by the time you're 7, you are sick of hearing day in and day out that you're not getting it,
Right. Yeah.
But it's also the energy around how you discuss education and discuss reading. Yeah. I feel like if it's not, if you're lacking enthusiasm, you know, like the vibe, we're all about vibes.
Right. Yep.
You know, so it's like, all right, get up, go to school. Like even the tone of the voice and the inflection and like, it matters of how you speak about learning and education
and making it fun and engaging. And I hate this because it's like every time we hit this point of things are getting like so deep.
Start to cook.
And, you know, it's brewing up in here and bubbling. We have to close. But this is very insightful because collaborations are ongoing. So what this has shown me is that we need to have another conversation with you to talk about not only the neuroscience of this, but also to understand why it is so important to start with what Carol says, Dr. Carol St. George, the womb.
Mm.
When you start reading at the womb and you have a practice of reading before you impregnate the womb, you can't, it's not to say you can't, but that desire of longevity has got to be imprinted like a duck or a goose.
Right.
It has to be in changing the mindset. So we're going to have you back. So I'm going to close.
Wait, before you close, Matt, tell us again where people can find
you.
The organization, the Imagination Library.
So yeah, we are, just Google Rochester Imagination Library. We're the first link there, and you click on that, and then you just go to sign up, and it takes about 30 seconds. Just so you know, if you got twins, sign them both up. We'll send them both a book. If you have a couple kids under five, sign them all up. Right?
And go over those ages again so people know who it's specifically for.
Up until your child turns five, they are eligible. So, you know, we love earlier the better, right? But if your child is 4 years and 7 months, sign them up and we'll at least get them a few books before, you know, they turn five.
What if a mom finds out that she's recently pregnant?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. The way that will work then is email me.
Okay.
mpresent@rochestereducation.org and let me know your due date.
Oh, I've
heard that.
We will sign your child up. Unfortunately, the way the system works is we can't sign children up who are prospective, who are not here yet, which, you know, may have to do with reproductive rights or whatever. But so email me and I will hit you up right a little bit after your due date, not day of, and confirm the address and confirm the information and make sure that your child is enrolled.
Awesome.
Well, we're going to close with a poem that was written by May, and it's entitled Heritage. It is a blessed heritage to wear pain, a bright smile on my lips. Our dark fathers gave us the gift of shedding sorrow in a song. Let's get lit.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.